It's time now for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. It's Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. This is tape number 450, July 27th, 1980. You will get used to the date and the number on the tapes. I've been doing that continuously because many people around the country and overseas collect these tapes, and it's easier to put them into chronological order and date them at the beginning and sometimes the end of the tape. The 2 years absence from KLRB was my own decision, and I went to a newsletter by tape cassette an hour a week instead of the half hour on the air. And right now, this evening, it'll be a little difficult to bridge that two-year gap because many people will have this cassette this evening going out to them, and they've had continuous programs of my news and information for the past 3 years on cassette and before that on the radio. There's three different kinds of people listening tonight. One is an entirely new audience that just happened to turn on KLRB and has never heard of Mae Brussel before. There are other people, new friends that I've known in the community that did not take the tape cassette machines, but will pick up now the gap of the 2 years of information research that I've been doing. And then those that subscribe regularly that will get this tape this evening as part of the ongoing series. There is one difference between the broadcast this evening and the ones that I did for 7 years continuously on KLRB before. Tape cassettes are now available for each broadcast, and you can write to me and ask how to order them. If the program seems to go too fast, if you miss part of it, if company dropped in, if you're away on the weekend, don't call and tell me about it. You can write and get the tape and obtain the cassette and receive the information yourself. Up till 2 years ago, I didn't have a printed sheet that accompanied each tape and broadcast, and people would say, where is she getting your information? This is too far out. I can't believe it. And yet all of my material comes from very establishment sources, from court reports, government documents, published books, newspaper articles, so that with every broadcast and cassette, there is a printed sheet on two sides, front and back of a piece of paper, with a list of books, bibliography, sources of information for members of Congress, for students, for people collecting their own library on research and assassination, so that nothing will seem too far out for you. You can have the information yourself and look it up, go to the library and find articles, whether it's the Washington Post, the New York Times, or various books, old books that are out and new books that are currently on the market, and I'll keep you up with the latest on political assassinations, conspiracies, government crimes from the Supreme Court and the White House on down to the local level. If you want a list of the tapes that are available going back to 1977 for 3 years, you can send me a self-addressed stamped envelope with some money to cover the printing, and I'll send you a four-page sheet of the past broadcast so that you can see the collection of articles, whether it is oil conspiracy or the Nazi conspiracy behind the killing of John Kennedy, or many subjects that we'll be talking about from now on every Sunday night that other listeners have been keeping up with. If you want those subjects and the titles, you can send for them, and you can send for the bibliography from each individual broadcast. You can write to me at Box 22511, Carmel 93923, or KLRB. Only send a self-addressed stamped envelope because I will not have time to answer the mail if I don't receive your request in that kind of an envelope, and then I can slip the information to you so that each week you can get the information. Many people years ago used to say when I was on the radio that I talk too fast. I do talk fast. But after Watergate, when the presidential crimes began to be exposed, the Tom Charles Houston plan, the White House secret teams, the killing plans of G. Gordon Liddy, the assassination attempts of Mr. Caulfield and Liddy and their orders to go out and wipe out certain people, and the various crimes associated with Watergate, when those became exposed, and then following that, the government mind control and medical experimentations and so forth, people could understand what I was saying, and all of a sudden I wasn't talking so fast. If you read it in Time Magazine or Newsweek and you hear me say it, it's understandable. If I say it 4 years earlier, ahead of them, or 2 years earlier, it seems garbled. It's like a different language talking about conspiracies, assassinations, and coups. But today, people are pretty sophisticated, and they understand what I'm saying and the pace that I'm keeping. Granted, it does go pretty fast. And I also jump from subject to subject in a given hour. I may get to 10 or 12 different subjects because they're important in the news that particular week, and I don't want to lose track of them, and they're updating previous tapes and radio shows, which, as I say, are familiar, and you can obtain those and the list of them. I have just two words to say about the Shah of Iran passing away today. It's a brief eulogy. It is good riddance. When I was on KLRB in December 1977, December the 18th, and that's tape number 300, I'll refer to those dates, I had a guest here, a woman organizer, one of the heads of the resistance against the Shah. She worked in California, she worked in Washington, D.C., and then they sent information to Iran about the protests and the people in this country that were supporting the overthrow of the Shah. We spoke of terror, of the Savak, the torture machines, the killing of Iranian citizens, and the threats in the United States of the Savak that worked with the CIA and the FBI in harassing and murdering people who were against the Shah of Iran. I was very happy to have this woman on, and she was an instrumental person in helping turn people on to the crimes of the Shah. And if people, more people in the country, had listened to that kind of person and what she was saying and read the literature that they were publishing out of Chicago, it wouldn't have come as such a shock that the people of Iran did not love the Shah of Iran. The CIA and the Defense Department feed themselves information from each other and believed that the man was universally loved. He was an egomaniac, and I'm glad he's gone. Many people ask me, is Khomeini any better? Were Lenin and Stalin any better when the Tsar was out? Did the French respond any better when the monarchy were out? That isn't the problem or the point at all. The force, the use of violence is necessary in a dictatorship to maintain order against the people. And when the people take over, they only know violence and they only know pain and terror, so that their leaders have no choice because there is not a clean way to have a revolution. The United States had a revolution we're so proud of. We separated from the British. Representation without taxation was the shtick that we were putting out. And then they came to this country, the British and others, and began to put the Indians into reservations and kill them. The Western movement was nothing but exploitation and murder and importing blacks from Africa to do the heavy work, and then also allowing them no representation. And the American Revolution wasn't such a great success. The minorities in this country hardly get representation. There was an article in the paper this morning about that Miami cop that's going to be indicted in the death of the black man down in Miami. That was the cause of the riots down there recently. $6 million of burning the city out of protest because the policemen that were arrested and charged with killing a man who had worked in the system, who was an insurance salesman, who worked hard in the American system and tried to take a piece of that little pie for himself, was beat up by the policeman. Four men were acquitted on those charges, and one of the policemen gave testimony about the beatings up and how he had tried in vain to separate this man from the police officers who killed him. So today they said that the only person charged for the murder of McDuffie is going to be the man who gave the evidence of the murder. He said today in the newspaper, "I can't see any cop going forward and telling the truth after this. There's no way they could indict me without my statements. And he told the truth, and I'm the one who's getting screwed." This is from the newspaper, so I can use that word. It's from the San Francisco Chronicle. And he said that he kept the officers off of McDuffie, and the only man being charged with the murder is the man who tried to find justice in the case. So that taxation without representation continues, and Arthur McDuffie, as a black businessman in Miami, was paying his taxes until they smashed his head in. For those who listen to KLRB and are not familiar with my name or voice, I must say that the purpose of the programs for the 9 years I've been on the air, the purposes are to expose the facts regarding political assassinations in this country and other countries overseas if they're done by the American government, and show that these high government conspiracies seep down into the very local levels, such as the Miami police and our local police, or particularly Los Angeles Police Department, Philadelphia, the murderous police departments that are now being investigated by Congress because the local cities can't carry it. I started broadcasting nine years altogether. It was 1971 at the time the Pentagon Papers broke, and I was invited to KLRB to talk about the importance of the Pentagon Papers, and I realized that in those papers were the exposés of the murder of DM arranged by Henry Cabot Lodge and the Central Intelligence Agency, the same dogs that had killed John Kennedy 1 month later. And then later they tried, at the time of Watergate, to blame John Kennedy for the murder of DM. E. Howard Hunt was brought into the White House to forge State Department papers to blame John Kennedy for the murder of DM, so that Senator Ted Kennedy wanted to run for president in 1972. They could smear the assassination on his brother. E. Howard Hunt was paid $100 a day to take State Department papers and a scissors and a razor blade and rewrite our history. Rewriting our history is a very dangerous thing because these documents are in the hands of forgers and crooks, murderers, assassins, so that when papers are released, it's hard to know which are accurate and which are not. You have to look at the total record of a person and study his past to accept some of the things that the released documents show or will show in the future. The biggest story in the country, passing on the Shah, I know you do want me to talk about him, but let's forget him for a few weeks. I've done a lot of tapes on the Shah of Iran and radio broadcasting on that person. The biggest story right now is the Billy Carter story and the Libya connections. This is a tangled web that involves the people that killed John Kennedy, the Watergate gang, the international weapons dealers, Billy and Jimmy Carter. Now, several weeks ago, as a matter of fact, it was several months ago, Robert Vesco charged that the Justice Department and the FBI, under Jimmy Carter, was trying to kill him. There was a contract of several million dollars to kill Robert Vesco because he allegedly had given Jimmy Carter millions of dollars towards his campaign, and being a sore point in the political campaign, it was easier for the Carter gang to get rid of Vesco. And then Vesco sought comfort in the Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, William Casey Cleeg that he always worked with, and today he was with Orrin Hatch down in the Bahamas, giving as much information as he could on Billy Carter, but trying to keep himself clean. What we have here is a Watergate, I call the Vesco-Carter affair the baby of Watergate, because it goes way, way back, the use of Vesco and organized crime, the syndicate out of Las Vegas, Nevada, Atlantic City, and Resorts International. Both Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon were very much involved and are involved in this gigantic narcotic syndrome, and also Billy Carter and Jimmy Carter are with the mafia down in Georgia. I've done many, many tapes on the Georgia mafia and the narcotic connections to Jimmy and Rosalynn Carter. But in this case, in trying to bring down Jimmy Carter with the Vesco connections, or maybe saying he isn't qualified to run for president of the United States, that would certainly assure the presidency of Ronald Reagan. And then the problem is that when Reagan gets in, it would be very easy for the forces that be to slip the rug right under him and pull him out and down the way Richard Nixon was brought down. In 1972, I published my first article in The Realist and said that Richard Nixon would be out of office because of Watergate. And even though he won the election in November, he was out of office. And I also wrote at that time that the next selected president after Nixon was Spiro Agnew and Ronald Reagan. It's taken a lot of work to engineer Ronald Reagan up to the candidacy, and he's an old man, and this is his last chance. Mr. America, Mr. Kling, there was a picture of him in the paper today climbing a tree and cutting branches. I think when he gets into the Vesco affair, he's on a limb and he's cutting his own branch off, because it's a tangled affair, and when the Reagan people go down to see Vesco, they had better be careful because of their close links to Vesco through the years, because they can expect a counter-reaction from the other side. The truth about political assassinations and the conspiracies is that the bulk of the destruction of getting these people out of office comes from them fighting each other. The only purpose of being on the radio every week or writing articles and making tapes is to illustrate the cast of characters. They're similar to the tigers in the Black Sambo story that run around and around and then melt into butter. They're fighting each other at the highest levels, and the stakes are high, and the country, most of the country, is pretty lulled by their entertainment media and don't understand what's going on, but some people have the capacity to follow the cast of characters and watch the system come down around them, such as it did with Richard Nixon at Watergate. He couldn't wait to be president of the United States, and then he really fell flat. Well, what were the most important stories that you missed the 2 years that I was off of KLRB that the others were able to keep up with? I suppose one of the biggest stories was the continuous investigation of the House Select Committee on Assassinations. They came out with a conclusion, a little whisper, yes, there was a conspiracy to kill John Kennedy, and there was a conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King, and then they closed the door before they had even used up all their money for the investigation and gave it back to Congress because they were afraid to get too far in the case. The last little whisper of the House Select Committee was that organized crime probably killed John Kennedy, maybe Carlos Barcella, maybe Santos Traficana down in Florida, but they didn't want to know and they want it out. But that story is still very much alive, and it connects again to the Vesco story, to the Libya story, and I'll make a few connecting links for you on that. There was a story in Washington, New York Times, December 24th, 1980, just this last Christmas. Two men were arrested in New York City at the Hilton Hotel. Very important characters. One was Frank Edward Turpel, an agent of the Central Intelligence Agency who provides the weapons for Libya, who's trained terrorists, who's the advisor to Idi Amin, sells weapons to Uganda. Mr. Turpel works with George Gregory Corcola, who has Amstec Corporation in New Jersey. He's heads of assassination teams with weapons by Mitchell Werbel. They're international arms dealers. They fund what is supposed to be the left, but was positively identified to the CIA, the FALN, the Puerto Rican terrorist group, and Carlos, the notorious Carlos. And this gang were behind the killing of the Israeli athletes at the Munich Olympic Games. And what was passed off as leftist organization terrorism the past years has been funded through a man named Mr. Cummings, who was in the CIA, started with the CIA in Philadelphia, set up his offices in London, and then his head office is down in Monte Carlo. When these two men were arrested, it broke open a can of worms, which right now seems very quiet, but which will be surfacing on and on because it is linked to Libya and Uganda, and it will tie into Gaddafi and Billy Carter. These arms dealers, there's another article, January 7th, 1980, in the San Francisco Chronicle, arms dealer who talks too much, and it's about the McLean offices of Frank Turpel, and about his wife that is a makeup woman for the Central Intelligence Agency, and their links to Mitchell Werbel in Powder Springs, Georgia, and the silencers for assassinations. Turpel and Corcola's clients, according to the Associated Press, are the FBI, the Secret Service, Federal Aviation, and so forth, and their offices are all over the world supplying arms and weapons, particularly to make it look like the left is doing the violence, so that the CIA offices could fund the PLO, the Gaddafi gang, supply them with weapons, airplanes, arm the Middle East, and set up assassination teams. Remember when Sirhan Sirhan was charged with killing Robert Kennedy? The motive was supposed to be his affiliation with the PLO, and he allegedly has $1 million waiting with Gaddafi when he gets out of Soledad prison several years from now. Well, the CIA arranges those transfers. If Sirhan hadn't been in the Ambassador Hotel and served his time as the front man, Robert Kennedy might have succeeded in running for president and winning that presidency, and then Richard Nixon wouldn't have been president in 1968. Sirhan did them a big favor, and there's a wad of money waiting down there in Libya. So that the story of Terpel and Corcoran's arrest and the connections to Libya has been sitting like a time bomb in Washington, D.C., and all of a sudden, Vesco Services sucking Billy Carter into his Libya operation in exchange for a $220,000 advance money and a few airplanes. Incidentally, the man in charge of arresting Terpel and Corcoran, the New York prosecutor, the attorney, Robert M. Morgenthau, who made the links of Terpel and Corcoran to the weapons in Libya and the assassination teams in the CIA, died just last week at the time that the Libya story with Billy Carter was breaking. Now, for some of you, these names don't mean too much, and I'm rolling along pretty fast. I'll have to update maybe 1 hour on this story alone, but I think that this is the big story. If I don't get back to it for a few weeks, save all your articles on Libya and Billy Carter, because this is not only Cartergate, but it can later bring down the Republicans as well, because they all are part of this operation. Another big story, of course, the last 2 years has been Jonestown, the purposeful murder of Representative Leo Ryan. He was the congressman who broke the story that it wasn't Fidel Castro's Cubans in Angola, that it was the CIA sending Cubans to Angola, the anti-Castro Cubans, and not the Fidel Castro Cubans. He put muscle onto the CIA and passed what became the Hughes-Ryan bill. Then Leo Ryan was sent down to Jonestown and purposely murdered, and now the CIA has turned over the Hughes-Ryan bill. No more Hughes in Congress, and Ryan is dead, and the CIA has its muscles again. When John Kennedy wanted to splinter the CIA into shreds after the Bay of Pigs, he had his head blown off, and when Leo Ryan wanted to control the CIA after Watergate, he was sent down to Jonestown to be killed. Representative Joe Holsinger, who is an attorney and the aide to Leo Ryan, received my tape cassettes and printed material that went with the tapes on the Layton family, on the Jonestown experimentation, on my research that it was a mind control, a test place for brain and medical experimentations. And he spent several months in Washington, D.C., and checked out and confirmed that this, in fact, was true, and all these people were tested for experimentations and drugs down in Jonestown, and that when Leo Ryan went down there, then every single person had to be killed on the premise of Jonestown. I did some radio tapes called The Boys from Brazil, meaning the boys from Guyana, suggesting the links of Joseph Mengele, the Nazi who did experiments at Dachau and Auschwitz, having a finger in the Jonestown pie. And I'll do a little more on that in a minute, on the Mengele's connections. But it was important that this operation had the similarities to a place called Colonia Dignidad. And many of you who haven't heard me for 2 years are not familiar with that term, but you'll catch on to the name. Jack Anderson's written articles about it. That's where Operation Condor is. Not the movie, but the actual assassination plans, that assassins that are sent all over the world. The center of Nazi war criminals that get plastic surgery, that meet. It's on the border between Chile and Argentina, and it's carefully guarded. It's a place for torture for the DINA, the Chilean police, identical to the SAVAK in Iran. And there's a book that came out in this time interim since I was on KLRB called Treason for My Daily Bread, the story of the man who shot John Kennedy from the fence, the fatal headshot, who came from Operation Condor, Colonia Dignidad in Chile. So there have been a lot of stories. I could go on and on with stories that you've missed, the Terpel, Corcoran, and so forth, but that's silly. I'll try to update each week as we go certain pieces of information, even if those who have earlier tapes bear with me for the repetition for a few weeks at least, or through the year, while we update some of the facts for you. Last week on my tape cassette that went out, I read a document and sent to subscribers, and you can order this from me if you want. It's a copy of an FBI report on Joseph Mengele. He was known as the Angel of Death, not such an angel, at Auschwitz, who decided who lived, who died, and he did experiments on needles into eyes, turning them blue, and also on twins, cutting them up to find the similarities and differences. And I did want to share this with you this week, because this is the kind of information I will be putting on the air in case new listeners are not familiar with my research. This document is one of the reasons I decided to go back on KLRB at this time, because one of the listeners to this program that subscribed on KZAP in Sacramento heard me up until 2 years ago when I did go off the air, and he went down to the Honduras to visit his uncle, who he said was a friend of Joseph Mengele's, the Nazi man who was so evil and continued experimentations in South and Central America after the war. And he asked his uncle, why wasn't Mengele's prosecuted at Nuremberg or hung there? Mengele's is a famous name in Germany, and they make farm equipment seen all over Germany. And he lived there 5 years, very wealthy, until he was recognized and fled down to South America. And the uncle said, well, the reason is very simple. Mengele's is an American citizen. So this person wrote to Washington, D.C. under the Freedom of Information and got the document for me from the FBI dated 1966 regarding Joseph Mengele's. And this document claims that on November the 15th, 1966, Mengele's was in the office of an attorney in Las Vegas, Nevada, and that he lived in Arizona under the name of Harold Endemann, and also Endemann, and that he had plastic surgery and had changed his hair, dyed his hair, and has various scars, and that he was living in the United States in a time period in the 60s, in 1966. The files of the Los Angeles office of the FBI reflected that Mengele's was the subject of a special agent report dated February 9th, 1944, in New York City. That was at the height of the war, when he could have been right at Auschwitz doing the experimentations, and they wondered whether they should denaturalize him, because he had been made a citizen of the United States in New York City. And at the height of the war, there was a question of whether or not the New York offices of the FBI should proceed to denaturalize Joseph Mengele's, because according to the FBI document, he was made an American citizen December the 5th, 1932, in New York City. And the FBI said they had no information concerning the result of the denaturalization proceedings. By 1966, they didn't even know if he was a fugitive in the United States, and they didn't look for him, knowing he was in Arizona and also in Nevada. There's a new book out on Errol Flynn, his relationship to the Nazis. It's called Errol Flynn, The Untold Story, by Charles Hyman, put out by Doubleday. And Errol Flynn's contact for the Gestapo, Dr. Urban, was also an American citizen. He joined the Gestapo in 1922, then came to San Francisco in 1930 and got his American citizenship, and then went back to the Gestapo and continued traveling around the world under the Rockefeller Institute for Tropical Medicine. So that the precedent of Nazis coming here as members of the Nazi Party, getting their citizenship, and then continuing to work for Adolf Hitler seems to have been true in the case of many Nazis, but particularly these two, Dr. Urban and Mengele's. And of course, Mengele's is a notorious, well-known person. Dr. Urban isn't that well-known. I'm going to turn over the tape now on side two. Subscribers to the tape are used to that, so we'll take a break while I flip the tape over for side two of this program.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers.